accession number 19023, Real 2.
Leslie Palmer, Real 2.
Yes, there was only once there was any leave, and it applied to about half a dozen people. And I had to go to Mersa to pick a load of supplies up, and he got a lift down to get on the train to go to Allings. And we took the truck off the road down into this ravine, covered it up, and he couldn't understand why I'd done this, because he said, there's still plenty of daylight. I said, oh, there isn't that much. And we got brewing up, and we cooked a meal and sat talking, and then it started getting dusk, and along with it came the bombers. And for about 4 hours they were plastering Mersa, and I said, now you know why we didn't go into it. So the next morning we went into Mersa Metro, and I dropped him to get his train, and I picked my supplies up and turned round and headed out of it again, back home, as it were. But I could move about that desert without any problem. I know I had to take a message from headquarters to B Company once, who were in the line, and it would be about 5 o'clock at night when I set off, and I finished up in a sand dune, not a very big one, but enough to stop me, and I couldn't get the truck out, so I stayed the night there with it. And then the next morning I picked up my rifle and headed north to the road, because I was about half a mile inland, and waited for a big scammel to come along, and lo and behold, one did. And they came down with me to the back to my truck, and in no time I was moving again. That cost us a few cigarettes. But yeah, wasn't bad in the desert, I didn't think, anyway. Bit boring, but.
Did you keep healthy in the desert?
Yes, I did. Oh, I got piles and finished up in Tobruk Hospital.
Was that because of the diet that you had?
Well, I think it was with the driving, the sweating on the seats and whatnot. The diet was pretty good. I liked it. We didn't get bread. We had hardtack. But the cooks were very good in what they could do with it. I mean, they could make puddings out of it. And then we had soya links. Now, nobody likes soya links but me. So I had plenty of soya links. And, yeah, it was all right. We all had our own separate supplies that we'd wangled over the period of time, you know. We'd built a stock up in a... We used to carry them in tins and McConaughey's and whatnot that you could have a do at night on your own with your stove and whatnot. But, yeah, it was fine. It got a bit warm when there were... bombing or shelling or anything like that, but it does anywhere. So I went up the desert once, then I came out, and we went up to Iraq to build defences, because they thought Jerry was coming through there. And when we got there, we had no winter clothing. And there was snow on the ground. So that was a bit cool. And we were in tents. And what we did was dig the tent out on the inside, so you were down about 2 feet below the ground level. And across the road from us, we found some of those 4-gallon petrol cans we used to have, the flimsy ones. And we used to make beds with those inside. And they gave us charcoal to do, have charcoal fires. And I forget how long we were there.
Do you know which place in Iraq you were at?
Yeah, I was at Two places, Kirkuk and Mosul. Because I used to go in there to do, see if we could buy anything like chickens and whatnot. We were sometimes successful. But, oh, it's an awful place.
Why was it so awful?
By the roadside was a dead camel, and that thing was there and stinking away like mad. You know, it was desolate. But going there was quite interesting, travelling there, because I got the job of being the, advance party. And there was a sergeant, and fortunately the sergeant was a maintenance sergeant travelling with me, and they gave me a 3-tonner and a trailer, both loaded, and we didn't have any maps. We just had an atlas of where these places were, and we set off, and we hadn't gone more than 60 miles, and the tow bar broke. Well, you always carried a sort of a steel cable for towing, and we wrapped this cable around the tow bar. We managed to jack it up, and we managed to suspend the trailer, and we set off. And we're very fortunate we came across a Rimi unit. We pulled in there, and we found the sergeant major and asked him if he could weld the tow bar for us. And he said, yes, he could. And he did a real good job. And he said, you wouldn't have any cigarettes, would you? So I said, only Victory V's, which are horrible. And anyhow, he settled for those. And he said, you might as well stay the night now. They fed us. And we pushed on. And we got within 20 miles of Alexandria when we heard the engine start knocking. Well, this laddie got out, and with a piece of wood, I don't know where he found it from, he was listening to the pistons, and he said, oh, it's that one. So we took the plug out of that, and we drove on steadily, and we finally pulled into Alex's, and we found the military police. And said, you know, would they wire back to our unit and tell them that we can do with a new engine? And we got the message back to sit tight and instructions would follow. So we stayed with the military police, and then the next day we were told that there wasn't any spare engines and we would have to go to Cairo to pick a truck up, because everything there was going up the desert. So they gave us passes and that, and we got to this place in Cairo and expecting to pick a truck up, and they said, oh, we haven't got one in yet, you'll have to wait. We stayed in Cairo with the military police for a while, and then eventually they came up with a 3-tonner for us, and it wasn't a new one, but they said it would get us there. And we drove it back to Alex. We had to unload both the trailer and the 3-tonner because we had to reload the other one in the right order. We got no help at all for that, just sweated it out unloading the truck, and eventually we got it reloaded and we set off again. Well, we crossed the Suez, we came up, I think it was through Beersheba, up to Banya. There was an aerodrome there. We followed the pipe, which went all the way to Baghdad. We followed the pipe, and at night we had a slit trench dug out in front of us, and we used to sleep in the slit trench, and if you heard anything, whoever was awake woke the other one, and you could see the wogs moving in front of us, but they never came up to us. So we eventually pulled into our unit 3 weeks after they arrived. which was quite something. Then they took us, they sent us to Cyprus. Sent us to Cyprus for a rest. They'd never had an air raid in Cyprus till we got there. And we had one that night, but we were all right. We were stationed in Nicosia, and it was quite comfortable.
How much damage did the air raid do?
Not a lot. Not a lot at all.
That was on Nicosia, was it?
Yes. And Famagusta. But there, you couldn't go on the sand, you see, after 10 o'clock in the morning or before 6 at night, because it just burnt your feet. But what we got was the 4th Indian Div came. Our unit went, and they left a dozen of us to teach them to drive. Well, I always wanted to drive a motorbike, and I'd never driven one before, but I picked one of our motorbikes up and I started driving it about, and I found it was no problem. So they gave me the job of teaching them to drive motorbikes and in Cyprus, and they were very good, the Indians. They did exactly what you told them. And you could, on the motorbike, you could get them going along and you could hold the back and walk alongside of them. They were marvellous. And they treated us like lords. They used to wake us up in the morning with a dixie of tea, and they used to make us our own food, and they really looked, they really did look after us. The Gurkhas, we came in one night when we'd been out, and I don't know what was going on, but somebody came running after us, and the Gurkhas stopped him immediately. They wouldn't let him go in, whoever he was, and we came. We stayed there for about another 2 weeks, the dozen of us, and we eventually went on the ship, which was an old, just a small coaster and one destroyer, and it had transport on it, and, just us, that's all there was, just the 12 of us. And we slept on the deck, on the over the wells of the, of the cargo holds. And again, it was a foreign crew, but the food was all right. We had no problem. Back to Alex, picked up the unit again and back up the desert. And I found it very interesting. Until, of course, we got attacked. Then Jerry went south of us and he went after the Free French who were south of us, and we were attacked down there. And what I couldn't understand, and we used to talk about this, when he attacked at the end of the line, as it were, we were all in the boxes, and it was the Free French he was attacking, and our tanks were all sat at the back of us, and why we didn't go forward and go around behind him, I'll never know. And we stayed put while this was going on, and then eventually, of course, he broke through. And I don't think Ritchie was much of a general, to be honest. And he instead of attacking with his tanks, he put them in piecemeal, where Jerry used to line his tanks up and come straight at you. And, of course, we didn't have the equipment he had. I mean, these 88 millimetres he had, and his tanks all had bigger guns than ours. I mean, he could sit at 3 miles and knock a tank out. We had to get on top of him to knock his out. But anyway, he broke through, and the lot I was with in the box, they went and were instructed to go south, back of him. I was instructed to go back with as much equipment as I could get on my van, on my truck, and I think there were 4 men as well I had to take with me. So the only thing I thought is, well, head back to Tobruk. I knew my way, and so I did, and I kept off the road, and it's a good job I did. All day long they were getting shot up on this road, trucks with nose to tail as they were falling back, and they were shot, and honestly, if we'd had a couple of Spitfires there, we could have blown a lot out the sky. And these biplanes were coming down, firing with everything they had. And eventually, I got to Tobruk and found I couldn't get through the barbed wire till I came to an entrance. And there was no sign of it being mined. And you won't believe how daft we were. Two of us walked in front of the truck, prodding the ground, till we got through into the where our unit had been. And it wasn't there, of course. It had moved on. And we went right through. We walked all night in front of that truck. And, you know, when I look back now, absolutely stupid. If we'd hit a mine, it would have gone up with it. And we went through there and came out the other side of Tobruk. And then they were sending all overseas troops back into Tobruk and letting us go south, east. And we had something to eat and whatnot. And there's trucks all over the place. And we carried along this road. And eventually I came to one of our own trucks and it had two lieutenants on it. And they were stuck anyway. We got them out of it and they came with us. And then we got back to our unit, what was left of it. But it was all coming together. I mean, I can remember an Italian truck pulling in with some of our people on it that captured it, and they had some eye ties on it. And I had to go back with this second lieutenant to somewhere just off the road. I don't know, I can't remember now why we were going. But we came across another one of our trucks that had a driver and another second lieutenant on it. So this fella said to me, he said, "Oh, I might as well ride with him. You follow us down." And it's a good job he did. I'm following him, and we come to a roadblock. And I don't think he'd seen a roadblock before, but I stopped. And there was troops on either side of the road, and he just drove straight through it, and of course, up went his truck over landmines. But we had ours lined with sandbags. And they were both shattered, these two. And it finished up that we had to get them into my truck. The truck was a wreck. And we had to head back, so I never knew why we went there at all. So from there, we fell back in order. From there, we fell back to, what do they call it? My memory at times slips.
Alamein.
But we were down in the desert. We weren't on the coast. And we were a bit short of equipment and stuff then. But we were still a force, I would have thought. And slowly we started building up. Then Jerry attacked just south of us. And, of course, he couldn't get through the depression. And he really got hammered. He did lose some stuff there. They were waiting for him this time. And it quietened down again. And then, of course, we got Montgomery, he came. We got the Guards Division came. We got the 49th Div came. I think it was the 8th Armoured Division. We got quite a bit of assistance then. Foreign troops we got. It meant that, they see, the 7th Armoured was the original Desert Rats. They were there, they'd got them all in. The Free French had got them all in. There was Greeks there. There was all sorts. And I think we had the quiet position down in the south this time. And we stayed there and got dug in and whatnot. And then the quartermaster asked me one afternoon. He wanted some supplies. And you didn't have far to go then, you see, for them. And he thought he would come with me, so we went back with these supplies, for these supplies. And it would be about 9:20 at night when we were driving back. And he looked at his watch. He said, "If you stop the truck, we'll see the fireworks start." I said, "What fireworks?" "Oh," he said, "it's the big attack tonight." I said, "Oh, nobody told me." And we didn't know anything about Alibi until all the guns went off. And then, of course, they broke through there, and eventually we went up, and I can remember driving up through there, and we got the job of cleaning up on two German divisions that had been fighting us most of the way. And let's be fair, the Germans were very good, and they, in a way, were fair. They didn't shoot you for the sake of shooting, you know, that you got reasonably well treated. But when I pulled through at Alamein and saw all the dead bodies, we were told we were going to clean up the 90th Light and the 21st Panzer, which had dug in on the coast. And we stayed there for a bit, and eventually that got sorted out.
What did that cleaning up job involve?
Oh, getting them to pack in, you know. I mean, they were surrounded. I don't know who else there would be with us. There'd be others with us apart from the 50 Div. We cleaned them up. I mean, they virtually wiped them out as such. And then we carried on. And there was all the ITIs coming out of the desert, because he took all the Italian transport, you know, and left them. They had no transport. They were just left in the desert. And they're not fighters, aren't they, ITIs? You know, the builders. And they were all had to be cleaned up. It didn't take a lot of people to do that job. And then we carried on till eventually we were cleared Libya. And then all the time you were getting rebuilt, the units were getting rebuilt, you know, with new people coming in all the time. We had three new transport officers while I was in the desert. They'd just been moved on or gone somewhere like that, and they were always wanting us to take commissions and go in the infantry.
Did you use Italian transport yourself?
No. No. We had the best truck I had in the desert, and I had one or two, was an Indian Chev. It was a 1500 weight. It had big balloon tyres, a wooden body, and the seat was wood with a cushion on it. It had no top. It had short windscreens that could be folded down. It had no doors. It had roll-up sort of doors in material which could be fastened back, and a canopy over the back. And that truck would travel at 60 mile an hour without any bother over all terrain, because we once did a run, and it was a major who was going, I was taking, and he said, oh, we've got to get there. And so I set off, and I was doing 60 mile an hour, and at the end of an hour I stopped. He said, what are you stopped for? I said, I want to check all these oils. I said, in this heat. And I said, we stop every hour. He says, but we won't get there. I said, we will. I said, we won't get there if we keep going at 60. And he did. He apologised. And he said, oh, I see what you mean now. I said, yeah. I said, we have to top up the water. You know, you have to check it all through when you're travelling like that. And some of the desert, you know, it's like caked. And you can travel fast on it. But you forget about the heat. You know, that engine's getting hotter all the time. And, they were good with those. I had American Chevs. They were good, but they bounced. They were so springy. So were the Dodges. The Bedfords, well, they weren't bad, the Bedfords, but you needed a new engine too often. You know, that was a thing we found in the desert. If you got 9,000 mile out of your engine, you hadn't done bad. But some of them went within 1,000. And they had to put new engines in quick. Good. So we chased Jerry then up to Tunis. We came to the Marath line. We went through the Marath line up to a place called Enfidaville. And then we got orders to pull out. And when we pulled out onto the road, instead of turning north, we turned south. And I thought, what the hell's going on here? And because I was the last one in this convoy, and we drove until it was dark and just pulled off the road and started bedding down for the night. And I said, what's on? Oh, we're going back to Alex. Now, that's a fair run, Tunis to Alex. But on the road, one of the good things was that they used to have like a naffy tent. So many hundred miles, you might go 200 miles, you find a naffy sort of tent. And it was usually run by the Church of Scotland. And you could go in and you could get sausage and mash and that sort of thing. And on the other side of the road would be barrels of water and petrol. So you could go over there, somebody in charge, and you could fill up everything you wanted and stay the night around there, sleep around there, because you always slept in the open there, and pushed on. And eventually we came to Alex. And it didn't take very long. We were loading on ships. And I can remember the ship I was on was the Leopoldville, Belgian ship. And what they'd done, they'd, over where the propeller shaft was, they'd boxed it all in. It looked wonderful. And that's where we were, down right at the bottom. And they had the holds all open, and they had ropes, nets all the way down. And on each deck, they had military police. The idea being that if you got hit, you started at the bottom getting off the ship, and we had priority to come up. But I thought, oh, I'll never sleep with that prop shaft going around there. Do you know, I had a marvellous night's sleep. And I woke up, we were pulling into Sicily. I'm not sure whether it was Syracuse or Catania, but we pulled into one of them. And we didn't have any bother getting out off the ship and that. We were up on the side of the hill overlooking the harbour, and I can remember this German plane diving down between the balloons, and his bombs dropped at the side of the ship. He missed it, and he got shot down just as he was lifting over the hill from us. And then we set to going up the east coast of Sicily. And we went up the east coast, and I can remember I came to a roadblock with our troops, and the officer stopped me. He said, where are you going? And I couldn't pronounce the name of the place correctly, and he said, oh, you mean Acireale. I said, that's it. He said, well, you can't go here yet, we haven't taken it. And eventually we took it, and then there was a battle on our left over a bridge, and we were still on this course, and we kept getting stopped, but it wasn't anything serious. And eventually we came opposite the toe of Italy. By then, of course, Patton had shot up on our inside, and they took all our transport, and we were ferrying stuff across to Reggio.